Welcome to another episode of Rebel Radio Podcast. We are back from Comicpalooza 2017.
What a wild ride it was.
It was pretty wild.
A lot of walking.
Thank you for people that listened to the live show that we did there with the 501st. That was a lot of fun. We had Josh and Nikki and Brian from the 501st join us. Cool show to do. I think that was our third year being the Comicpalooza podcast partnership. And I think that might have been our best live show, maybe. Production-wise,
best shows.
Production-wise, maybe not the best. We had some audio issues. We only had a couple of mics, but overall, I think it was a really solid show.
It was,
and
I just enjoyed it the heck out of it a lot.
Yeah, well, you kept asking questions about how the ladies dress.
He's like, well, how do you dress?
The perv and Frank had to know where they hid their boobs and stuff.
Well, no, I just, you know, in case there's more females that want to get into it.
That's not really why you asked, Frank. You're not in front of the 501st now. You're in front of Matt and Mark. You can tell us what you really want to know how they
tell us.
You just want to know how they fit their parts into the costume.
I already know how they do it. I've watched enough cosplay stuff.
But Frank, give us the real answer. That's what we're getting at.
Do they squeeze them together?
You wanted to know if they taped them.
There's a lot of different ways they could do it. So if they wanted to do it, then they can literally duct tape their boobs into the position they want, and then they take and put saran wrap around it, and then put more duct tape around it, and then they draw their pattern from there and cut it off.
Let's face it, though, Frank. You weren't looking for the benefit of other females. You were looking for your own benefit.
Yes.
You want inquiring mind of Frank wanted to
Frank's
know.
Benefit.
No.
Yeah. We all know. You can pretend that you didn't. It's okay. It's okay, Frank.
Frank's massive benefit.
No, I just think it's really cool, and maybe it'll inspire more people to, you know, work on some Star Wars outfits and join the 501st and then go out there and do some charitable work.
Well, I think when it comes to 501st and the idea of those kind of costumes, I don't think it's inspiration in case people were doing it. It's the cost of it. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
It is, but I mean, for those who can afford it.
Which is, you know, it's still very expensive.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I heard the low end is like $1,500.
No. Low end is like $5 for Imperial Officer. That's the cheapest. That's via Brian. Red Imperial Guard, number 602-00.
I'm talking about more like a basic stormtrooper. Yeah.
But it was a cool show. Overall, Comicpalooza this year, I've been involved with Comicpalooza now 8 years or something like that. And I felt it was the weakest Comicpalooza. It was cool seeing, we went to see Chuck Norris. We were in the same room as Chuck and we survived.
Yes.
That was cool. but it just, celebrity wise, it was comic book wise a little weaker. It was really cool. I got some Starman stuff signed by James Robinson and Tony Harris. But overall, I just felt that this was one of the weaker lineups they had.
I think after last year's 30th anniversary of Alien.
Aliens, you mean?
Yeah, Aliens with an S.
Well, it's not so much that trying to top the year before. I don't think there's certain things you can't always top, but I just think that you could have brought, like, having the Defenders there was cool, but then once Charlie Cox canceled, it was kind of like, and you couldn't get Kristen Ritter. So it was like,
yeah.
You know, it just felt like the little things like that were lacking. It's just like the year they had the Gotham cast. It was cool, but they didn't have Ben McKenzie, the guy who played Gordon. So it's like, you had the Gotham cast and no Gordon. It was weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of what this year felt like. It's cool you have the Defenders, but you're missing Daredevil and Jessica Jones. So it just felt like
two of the, you know, bigger names.
Yeah, two of the better series.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but overall, Comicpalooza is still always a blast of an experience. We always have a good time. And we'll be there next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a lack of effort on the people who put on Comicpalooza, you know?
Right.
They reach out. They try to get who they feel the fans want to see, what's hot and what's going on at the moment, you know? And they can't help the cancellations.
I do think this year was a little tough being able to have a Memorial Day weekend, and you had it in the middle of May, and there's another con that took place in San Antonio this past weekend that had a huge guest list, and that's of course Alamo City Comic Con, and I can't help but think that some of the talent that Comicpalooza might have gone after went to Alamo City instead.
Right.
They wanted to do the holiday weekend. They didn't want to do two cons close together, so their agents presented them with these contracts, and I think a lot of them chose Alamo over Houston, unfortunately, in this year because of the placement when they had Comicpalooza.
Yeah.
Now, is Alamo like a privately run one, or is it?
I'm sure they're all basically privately run. I mean, you know.
I know, like, Houston kind of bought into Comicpalooza.
Well.
It's what I heard.
Houston First, the Tours Bureau, has a some ownership in it, but it's still privately owned, essentially. It just has, they're like a major sponsor for
it. And you know what? What's funny is because you had brought up before the lack of artists at the con, and I heard it all over the floor. Like, there wasn't enough comic book artists. You know, yes, it titles itself as a pop culture thing, mm-hmm. but people are going for a comic book and entertainment thing. You know, and just without the artists there.
Well,
you know,
there weren't no major comic artists. And then the other problem was they had Artist Alley separated from the merchandiser. So you went down the merchandising end on the other side of the food court past NASA and all that. People were everywhere. You go down to Artist Alley where several people we know are selling their comics and art and stuff, and there was hardly anyone walking those lines. They were passing up to your go celebrities to go. And I think you need to keep everyone together. I think if you're selling stuff, whether it's art, original comic books, or toys and games, that you should all, I think it should one be one giant merchandising area. Mm-hmm. It's okay to separate the artists. Have the artists on the front of the merchandise and the merchandise in the back, but don't have this huge food court separating them all.
Yeah, that's true.
And, I thought that kind of affected the way the show flowed. Spent most of my time this year on the floor because there weren't a whole lot of panels I wanted to go see.
Yeah, me neither.
In fact, I attended just one panel. That was Chuck's.
Yeah.
Same here.
And it was just, that's how I felt about this year. The Defenders panel was going on about the same time we were doing our live show. And once Charlie Cox dropped off, I was like, yeah, no big deal. But overall, a good experience. And we had some fun at Comicpalooza 2017.
Yeah.
Was there a highlight of the show for y'all for this year?
Chuck.
Chuck, yeah.
How about, I'm sorry. It was freaking Chuck Norris.
Go ahead.
And him talking about, you know, his martial arts background and how he, Master Lee, when he talked about Master Lee that he practiced Taekwondo with in Korea when he was on base, U.S. Air Force, and he got his black belt under him. Master Lee, after that, he failed to mention that Master Lee came on and started ATA Taekwondo in the USA. And he's Grandmaster Lee. He's the grandmaster of where my dad got his black belt, where me and Jackie got ours. And so it was awesome to hear that he, you know, that's where he got his black belt.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of it.
What?
The American Taekwondo, whatever.
It gets...
I mean, they made up belts that don't even exist in the real Taekwondo.
That's Sangam style. It's a different style.
But we're getting off track.
This isn't a karate show.
Yeah.
Well,
and then the Gracies.
I thought was cool about the whole Chuck thing was like Chuck Norris, he's a pop culture icon in a way, but there's maybe 40 to 50 people on this planet that are like icons that are above the stratosphere. And one of those guys is Bruce Lee. And the fact is to hear Chuck Norris talk about Bruce Lee in a casual way, like we talk about each other as friends, was really cool. Like, man, this fucking guy knows Chuck knows Bruce Lee, and he calls him, wants to put him in a movie, and he's going to kill him in the movie.
That was really hilarious.
Because Chuck's not in those top 50. Don't get me wrong, he's a pop culture icon, but he's not in that elite 50 that have transcended the whole world as far as an icon like Bruce Lee has. And and I thought that was really cool just to hear a casual story about, like, yeah, this guy named Bruce Lee, he's a friend of mine, you know, just talking like we would talk about each other, only we're not famous, you know.
And then whenever the one Q&A that they allowed.
You think you're famous in bed, Frank, but you're not. No.
That one Q&A they had, he talked about the game of death, the questionnaire. He said, you know, was implying, you know, hey, was that your real chest hair? And Chuck's like, no, that wasn't my real chest hair. If he would have pulled my real chest hair, there really would have been a game of death. There really would have been a fight. And so that was awesome.
Yeah. it was cool seeing him speak, you know, just because it was something that a lot of cons, that's the first con he'd done since like the year I was born. So,
wow.
When he appeared in San Diego. And so he doesn't do a lot of cons. So I think it was very special just to be in that room with him and hear him speak. And I'm kind of glad it wasn't covered with Q&As. I'm not a big fan of questions because audience questions are usually fucking terrible.
Yeah,
they are.
These people
ask stupid stuff.
I'd rather just listen to him just tell stories and talk about his experiences and stuff. I also hate when I go to these cons that they're only 45 minutes. I understand the smaller panels, but like I think your headliners deserve an hour and a half. I just think the panel should be a little longer.
Chuck
could
have been longer.
Because
I think they should dictate how long their panel is.
Well, they probably they probably could, I would imagine, their contract. I guess it depends on how hands-on that actor or person would be involved where he wants to come forth and say, look, can I do an hour and a half? I don't know how all that works exactly, but I imagine it could turn out that way, you know. But that was the only panel all three of us attended. We attended, it was on Saturday morning at Comp Blues, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
I'd say that was a highlight of the show for me as well. Getting my Starman stuff, I got a book and my Starman action figure signed by Tony Harris and James Robinson. That was really cool. I'm not a big autograph guy, you know, I never have been, but it was cool just to have them sign something that I appreciate. It was more just like putting a stamp on, like, I really appreciate this body of work you guys did. Because Starman was a really great comic book in the late 90s, a really good run of 80 issues, just a really solid story from beginning to end. So I got it signed, not because I'm going to sell it or because I feel it's worth anything. I just felt it put a stamp on a really good run of books that those guys did, you know?
Yeah.
And Tony Harris and James Robinson aren't huge names. They're not Frank Miller or nothing. But in the comic world, people know who they are. So it was cool to have them sign that.
Did you get anything, Matt?
This year I bought, actually Mark pointed it out to me, I got a Last Action Hero.
Oh, yeah.
Figurine for $3. And he comes with, like, bitch slap action. His arm comes up, and it goes down. It comes up, and it goes down.
Bitch slap the kid.
Yeah, I know, right? Get the fuck out of my way. No, I don't know. But, and I was like, oh, my God, that's Jack Slater.
That was the
Last Action Hero.
That was the same table where I found my Burger King kids toy Wolfman figure.
Yes.
So I was there with you. And later that weekend, I found Dracula at another table. So I got two out of the four Universal Studios.
Which is awesome.
Burger King toys.
What else did you get, Mark?
Some comics.
Finally joined the force.
Oh, don't even. I'm not even going to get. You already went off on stupid Facebook going, I bought an Ultra Saber. Whoop-de-doo, everyone has an Ultra Saber. It's like,
I hear Chuck Norris has one.
I still look at it like, why did I spend $80 on this? It's sitting in the corner of my room. I still look at it like that. It's one of those things.
Dang, you spent $80?
Well, by the time you paid tax, it was like,
how much did you spend on yours?
$65. They did a special grab box or grab bag deal. It was after tax and everything, it was $65. It was like $50.
2 years ago? Or last year?
2 years ago, maybe? Yeah. Year and a half, something like that.
Probably.
But you couldn't choose the hilt. You couldn't choose the color. You wanted to get. So it's like they would just pick a random one.
Well, I picked one up that was $65, but it had a short blade on it. His boss wouldn't allow me
to swap it.
Get the longer blade or some crap.
They
mislabeled it. And he was cool about it. He tried to fix it. His boss was being a bitch.
That person that was like running the booth, she wasn't there last year. The person who was running it last year was really cool.
He was cool. Mm-hmm. He found one that was in the back that hadn't been put out yet that was marked $75. So it was only $10 more.
It was actually the color you wanted, because I think it was red.
No, it was, the other one was green also. Okay.
No, it was blue.
It was blue. I wanted blue or green. I didn't want red. I think red's overdone. Everyone does it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was $69, so it was only $5 more, and then I added the blade on it that you can do combat with. So that's why it was $80.
Totally. I was pretty proud of myself. I walked out with $50.
I walked out of Comp Blues with money this year.
You know? Yeah. All I got was I put a belt clip on one of my Ultra Sabers and got a couple of patches for the shirt that you got us.
Oh, yeah.
I picked up a couple of patches. I picked up a vintage Bosk loose figure from Star Wars. Nice. Not a card. I went into Comp Blues looking for an original carded Star Wars figure, but the Star Wars sellers were lacking this year as far as carded stuff. There was a lot of loose figures available.
A lot of loose figures.
But carded stuff, I think carded stuff is starting to get back into the basements, you know, with this whole thing of Disney and reviving Star Wars as big as it is right now. I think carded stuff maybe is people are starting to put it away again, you know, and, oh, I'll sell you the loose stuff, but I'm going to hang on to those carded stuff a little bit longer, you know, because the prices have started to skyrocket again on carded stuff. You know, for a while there, you could still find Return of the Jedi carded stuff, you know, from the mid to late 80s for $20 to $50 on a card, and some of that stuff's starting to shoot up now.
Dang.
You know, so I think that's maybe, I think I get this feeling that's what's happening. But then you can get the 90s stuff a dime a dozen.
Yeah, because I'm with Mark. I didn't see nothing.
The Power of the Force stuff from the 90s, man, none of that has any value. It's all, you know, we dump bins of it for three figures for $10 or whatever, you know,
right,
even on their cards, you know.
And those are the ones that I played with.
Oh, I have tons of that stuff at my mom's house in boxes, you know. And so, you know, but it's Star Wars, you know, it will have value one day, even the Power of the Force.
He has enough stuff, he can, like, have his own booth. Well,
I think the problem with the Power of the Force stuff is most people bought it are our age, so they have it. Yeah. So it hasn't had a chance to increase in value. What's going to happen is our kids' generation, 20 years from now, is going to start wanting that stuff. And the power of the Force stuff, you have to be patient with. It will get value, but it's going to take time. And I think that's the problem with it. It's going to be a little bit longer before it gets value than the vintage.
And the figures were actually pretty neat looking.
Yeah.
So,
well, except for bulked up Luke. Remember the first, first wave Hulk they came Luke. Out with back in 95? They had Monkey Face Leia, Bulk Han, Chewbacca.
Empire Strikes Back.
Chewbacca looked like he had been lifting weights. You know, the early Power of the Force figures from 95 are a bit awkward.
Fill the steroids, Luke.
Yep.
Use the pump, Luke.
But Compalooza 2017, a good time overall. And we have a few interviews to feature here, and we're going to do them and talk them. We're not going to do them. We're going to talk about them. And we're going to start out with the first interview. Actually, it was the last interview we did on the weekend, but we're going to play it first because it's not a great interview, and it's not really my fault. Even though I felt like I didn't do a great job, we interviewed Sam Jones, who plays Flash Gordon. And we interviewed him at Space City Comic Con last year, and I lost the audio. And that interview was better than this one, and it sucks. But I'm glad I got to talk to him again. Sam is a really nice guy, but he's a terrible interview. He, like, and people that listen to interviews and stuff, you know, when you ask questions, yeah, you got to do your job as an interviewer and come up with some good questions. Or you can just have a conversation with him like we do with Ming Chen, because he's a podcaster. You just have a conversation with him. Or Chuck Huber.
Or Chuck, yeah. But
sometimes you want them to carry the conversation because you ask general questions, and Sam did not do a good job doing that. He just sort of said something and was hoping you'd had another question, and he didn't carry the conversation real well, and he kept getting distracted by people at the table, which I understand it's his job as fans, but I just felt like this interview is going nowhere, so it's only like 2 minutes long. But I'm still glad we got to talk to Sam Jones. He's one of those guys that, man, Flash Gordon is, for, like, especially me and Frank, is one of those movies with Star Wars and Indiana Jones and stuff that we grew up watching as much as we possibly could on Saturday mornings, whether it's Big Trouble in Little China, Star Wars, or Indiana Jones.
Flash, they're in there.
Flash Gordon was in that rotation of films you watched growing up. And
it was on HBO, Showtime, whatever. You just stopped. You watched it, even though you've seen it 20 times.
That's awesome. You know, Flash Gordon is still cool as hell. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, there's going around a script right now in Hollywood. They're trying to, you know, get a script and do a big budget. I don't even want to call it a remake at this point, just a reboot. Because, you know, when a movie's 1980, you're not really remaking it. You're just trying to bring Flash Gordon into a new generation. I hope it does well, because I think Flash Gordon is almost a 100-year-old character. I think he deserves to have films made about him. But I don't think anything's going to top the 1980s cheese fest.
They tried to do a TV show.
That TV series on Sci-Fi Channel was terrible. Yeah. Man, I didn't even make it through the first episode. It was so bad. It was awful, awful, awful. But that was before Battlestar Galactica, before Sci-Fi Channel figured out how to make good television shows, you know? And
yeah, but yet they still turn out, you know, Sharknado.
Sharknado?
Yeah. I get a Sci-Fi Network. I think there's two buildings. There's one. Here's the building where we're going to do The Expanse and Battlestar and 12 Monkeys. These really good shows. We have all our smart people working over here. Then we have a building over here like, hey, you the fucks, make up the stories about Shark Dinosaur Attack Part 5, you know? Like, y'all come up with the shit, and y'all's budgets are like $10 million each movie. You
know? It's like literally just write a bunch of names down, throw them in a hat, pick out two or three, and that's what we're going to make a movie out of.
Well, yeah, that's how Sharks I feel about the
Donkey
Sussies.
Monkey Clown.
That's how I feel about the
Monkey Clown.
Puppy Monkey Baby.
But yeah.
That's how I feel about the Sci-Fi Network, is there's two buildings. One is smart people making the really good stuff and idiots. But anyway, so Flash Gordon, Sam Jones, here's our interview with him from Comicpalooza 2017.
Rebel Radio Podcast. Say that.
The Rebel Radio Podcast.
The Rebel Radio Podcast. How you doing? All right, man. Good. All right, go ahead. All right,
well, we are here at Comicpalooza in Houston with Sam Jones, Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
And how are you doing today, Sam?
Good. Good turnout for a Sunday, yes.
And so Comicpalooza is treating you good?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I got here yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Good time, really good turnout, and here we are Sunday already. Comicpalooza.
That's right. So, man, you know, it's been, what,
how are we going? 35 years since Flash Gordon? 37?
Well, we filmed it 38 years ago. Came out 37 years ago.
Man, isn't this incredible that you still have Legion of Fans? Like, oh, that's my young son right there. I'll let him watch it. And at first, you know, he's like, Dad, this is kind of silly. Then he didn't move for 2 hours. You know? And that's what's so great about the appeal of Flash Gordon, how awesome it is over the years. And you get to see new generations grow up, right?
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful, yeah. And of course, Ted sort of rebooted Flash Gordon, introduced the brand new age demographic. It used to be my age or my children. Now it's my children's age as well, so it's wonderful.
And I know it's giving you an opportunity to work on a new documentary. I know you like talking about the life after Flash, right?
Yeah, it's wonderful. We've been filming for a couple of years. I like to see it filmed for 10 or 20 more years. I really love doing documentaries.
I've heard rumors of a possible release this year. Is that still possible?
I think that's what they want to do, yeah.
Okay, cool.
I like to see it go on forever. I really do, because the thing about a documentary, you never know what you're going to get on film. And it's wonderful.
So what are some of your last memories of playing Flash Gordon and bringing that character to millions of people?
It was wonderful. You know, it was 1979 is when we filmed it.
I've heard rumors of them remaking it or doing a reboot.
Fox has the rights. It's been in development for over 2 years.
What do you think's taking it so long? Because I think it's just because your version's
Fox
so
Studios.
Awesome.
You know, that's how the machine operates.
I just think they're afraid. I think they're afraid to do a better version than yours. That's what I think.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's Fox has it, and it's again, it's in development.
And okay,
so we're excited about it.
Anything else you're working on right now, or anything you're doing?
Did a couple films last year that will be out late this year, early next year. One called Accelerator, one called Head Games, and one called Enter the Fist, the Golden Fleece.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah.
And I don't want to take too much time. You got these kids, and appreciate you.
All right. Well, that was Sam. As you can see, the interview was kind of. This short. It was all right.
Yeah. I wasn't there, so.
Frank was with me. It was on Sunday afternoon we talked to Sam. And he's very much, remember we talked about your experience with Lou Ferrigno when your son got his picture with him, and he's very much like money, and Sam's like that. He did the podcast interview, but he wouldn't even take a picture.
Wow.
He's just like, nope, I charge for photos. It's like, dude, we're promoting you on our website, on our podcast, so shouldn't we help you promote you with a photo of us, you know? And he just won't do it, you know?
Yeah, well.
But some guys like will do photos. Like last year when we did, a couple years ago, we did Rudy Sarzo and Marky Ramone and those guys.
Yeah.
They charge for photos, but they understand when you're doing a promotional piece for a podcast or something, they'll still do a photo with you because they get that. But, you know, some guys are like that. I mean, you know, he did pose in Playgirl for crying out loud, Sam Jones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so he will do anything for money, I guess. You know? But still was really cool to talk to him. Second time I talked to him in a year. And that's kind of a highlight, just standing next to Flash Gordon. And he's a big dude, man. You know, he is. He's a big guy.
Built like a football player.
Yeah. And
yeah.
And Jets. Speaking of Marky Ramone, he was at Compalooza this year, but we did not get over there to talk to him. I went by his table two or three times, and he was never there.
I know. It's like, oh, there he is. But we got to go take care of this first.
Yeah, and then we got back over there, and he's gone.
It's like, what the hell?
Because I'm sure Marky would have done an interview again.
Oh, yeah.
Next up on the table for Compalooza 2017 is friend of the show and returning guest, Chuck Huber. And this was the first interview we did. So we did our last interview, now our first interview, then we'll do the one in the middle last. And we interviewed...
It's confusing to me, too,
We
guys.
Interviewed Chuck again, or I don't even want to call it an interview. We had a conversation with him.
Yeah, it really was just a conversation.
You know, Chuck is a super nice guy. For people who don't know, I should say, Chuck Huber's a voice actor. He also does some live-action acting, but he's mostly known for his voice acting. And he's done Dragon Ball Z.
Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah, I know you know the shows better
Soul
than
Soul Eater. Attack on Titan.
Yeah. Because Matt's taken some classes with him, so Matt's, as people that listen to the show know that. And Chuck is like one of those guys that you would never know that he's a bit above the normal people because he is an actor. He's really down-to-earth, really cool. Just he treats everyone like they're his friend, and I can't say enough nice things about Chuck. Out of all the celebrities I met, him and Ming are just the two
genuine.
Just nicest, genuine, down to earth guys. You know, we feel like in some ways we have a little bit of inside with Chuck because his beautiful wife Jessica. We met back in 2011 at Compalooza,
right?
When she was first starting out her art career. And we kind of helped her out, find her way. She had just moved to Houston. And years later, we didn't know that she was going to meet Chuck and marry him and all that.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, and so he's a really, really super nice guy. And it was a fun interview, as always. We talked about a few different things we did last year, a few things that he's working on. We talked about his involvement with Star Trek Continues and some other things he's doing. So listen to this and enjoy it. Matt, before we listen, you have anything to add since you have a personal connection with Chuck?
Yeah, we are working on his final project with the voice class, the master class. You can find that at chuckhuber.org if you do want more information on that. It's fun. You learn a lot. And if you're looking to, you know, learn a little bit more about voice acting, trying to get into that that field, you know, hit it up. And we talk about it in this interview.
All right. Well, here it is. Chuck Huber at Compalooza 2017.
Thanks.
Yes, we are ready.
I have to get in a little closer.
All right, well, Chuck Huber, welcome back to Rebel Radio.
Hello. It is good to be here because I am Chuck Huber.
Other than Ming next door, I think you're the only other guest we've had on twice now.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yes. So that makes you, you know, special.
I am special.
And so what have you been up to?
A little Pilates. I just finished a 4-day water fast, which is true. Actually, that's why my voice is fried.
Oh, man.
I hiked the Badlands in South Dakota. It was pretty awesome.
Yes. Uh-huh. I think I saw you put some pictures up on Facebook. Yeah. That was really cool.
Yeah, it was good. It was a cow attacked us.
Wow, a cow?
Really?
Yeah.
You would think that would happen here in Texas more, but you know.
We're in the middle of the Badlands, and some cow, juvenile calf, got loose, and it was lost.
Right.
And so it followed us for 16 miles and kept like nudging us and beating us. Wow. It was scary for a minute.
Oh, I bet. So, you know, last year we talked about so many anime stuff, and like, I know Matt's gonna have some anime questions, but I've been watching Star Trek Continues, and man, you know, I'm not a huge old school Trek fan.
All right.
But the stories, the writing on this is awesome.
Thank you.
And I
wrote every episode. Every episode written by Chuck.
You of course play
McCoy. Dr. McCoy.
Yeah, Dr. McCoy. Yeah. And a little bit of a DeForest Kelly harvesting there a little bit, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, D. Kelly was the man, so you kind of just, like, absorb all his sort of spirit, and then the show was put together so well that you just kind of have to fit in the little puzzle piece that's left, the little McCoy puzzle piece that there is.
And so how did that come about? I know it's fan-produced, and y'all have done some Kickstarters, things like that.
Yeah, that's right. Vic Mignogna is our executive producer, and he... you know, it's his brainchild, his passion project, and he took it to the furthest extreme that you can take a project like that to.
Oh yeah, when you watch it, it's hard to believe that it's y'all aren't on those sets from the 60s. You know.
Well, the sets were built from the shop drawings from the Desilu Studios. So I mean, we had the exact shop drawings, the specifications, and
excuse me.
It's really, I mean, it's amazing. It's a privilege.
Is it done yet, or are you trying to do a
couple
more? Yeah,
we've finished filming every episode.
Okay.
11 episodes total. We're just in post-production now.
Because I think it's up to 8, I think, on YouTube right now. Okay.
Yep, yep.
And one thing I was really impressed was the Mirror Mirror episode that y'all did a sequel to. And that was where it really got me. I'm like, wow, this is really well written.
Yeah, you know? That was a lot of fun. I got to be evil Dr. McCoy. I wonder what this will do.
So Matt, you're our resident anime guy. What do you got for Chuck? Other than you're taking classes with him, of course, and that's a lot of fun.
Yes. I know I talk about it a lot on the show. Everyone's having a lot of fun with this last project. We're doing a Soul Eater Abridged.
I know.
Yes.
It's going to be incredible.
It's a lot. I think everyone's had a lot of fun with it. There's even people that, you know, like Chris Escalante.
Right.
You know, he's working, but he found time to throw in some work. And
that's awesome.
Looks like he got casted as, I forget who he got, how he got casted as, but I know he's going to rock it. He's
of course.
Excellent.
Yeah, the class is filled with a lot of talented people, and the way the project came together at the end was really neat because I was pretty much hands off, and it was like this is it. This is you step out into the world, see if you can make it happen, and everybody worked together and put together a really cool script, and auditions are in. We're gonna rock it.
Oh yeah.
Kill it.
And for people that don't know, I mean, if they want to take this class, they do it online, right, through Facebook?
Yeah, yeah. It's a Facebook, private Facebook page, and we do Google Hangouts now, too. And assignments I do a live sort of broadcast and talk about the assignment and go over some critiques of assignments that are posted. You post to the page. We do dialects. We do commercial work. We do kind of a voice matching thing. A lot of different stuff. It's been really, really easy, really fun. And I say easy in that you don't have to be there when the classes happen because they're recorded. So if you miss the class because you got something, you just watch it the next morning. Right. It's sort of the Netflix of classes. Like, I don't think you should have to be there. You can just take the class whenever, you know. You got to keep up with assignments and stuff, but it's been really fun.
Yeah, I know you've enjoyed. He talks about it a lot.
Oh yeah, and sometimes, you know, you get behind. It's like you just let Chuck know. It's no, I don't care. It's no hassle.
I don't care.
You work at your own pace. I've been 2 weeks behind before and then turned in like three things at once, and he's like, "Whoa, okay,
you
yeah."
Be harder on these people, Chuck.
No. I don't. The creative process, like, I don't. I think there's a. Like, motivation is important, but the motivation comes from, like, saying, hey, you know, you guys said you want to do this, so do it.
Right.
And that's about it, you know. And to see the way this final project's come together in its final stage has been pretty awesome.
And I have a couple of questions. On our website this year, we've been doing, obviously, it's 40 years of Star Wars, and it's 25 years of Batman animated series. So if there's one Star Wars character you could voice and one Batman series you could voice, who would they be?
Joker for sure and Batman. I can't do it right now because my voice is fried. But in Star Wars, who would I... Not right now, but I'd probably voice Han Solo. Yeah. I could rock some Han Solo.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
Got that. Yeah, what? I could see Joker. I could definitely see...
It's just Stein twisted a little to the left.
Exactly.
So you've been watching Dragon Ball Super, so you can't spoil anything for me. I already told you that.
No.
Everybody dies, but they come back to life, don't worry.
I would say so it looks like there is going to be a tournament. They're bringing back the tournament. And the reason we say Android 17 is because, of course, Goku, he likes to fight everybody. He doesn't care if you're stronger or weaker. He wants to fight everybody. So he seeks out Android 17. How well do you think he fares in this tournament? I mean, we're going to see Frieza and possibly Cell in here.
Android 17 is the second to last man standing. That's what I'm going to call. I don't know if that's true. I'm just going to say that.
Is this one of those things like last year where you're like, I can't comment, but I know enough to where I can say that I can't say anything, and I'm like...
No, I really don't know.
Oh, okay.
If I knew, I would say something accidentally.
I would like to see that. I would like to see Android 17 going to the end.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Going out in a blaze of fire if he has to go out.
Goku killing him.
I would kill him. Not on purpose. I don't think so.
Accidental. Right.
Oops, too much Kame on the Meha.
Yes. A little bit too much Kame on the Meha.
So any other projects you're working on right now or anything?
No, right now I'm mostly just kind of focused on home life, wrapping up the classes. Been doing a lot of, like, I don't know, hiking and, you know.
Enjoying some relaxing time.
Yeah, I went camping with the kids in the Cap Rock Canyon last weekend. It was fun. And then summer will start up. You know, there's some convention season stuff. This is where conventions happen. So I'll do the conventions for a while.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Anything else for Chuck?
No. It's like we've there's people here to see Chuck, and you know, we're always glad to have Chuck on the show.
I love being here.
Yes.
And well, we thank you again for coming on the Rebel Radio Podcast.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
That was Mr. Huber, as we now should call him. I don't know why.
Just so people don't get confused with Chuck Norris and Chuck.
Yes, but,
like Matt did when we were trying to like talk about your interviews.
It's funny. He's only, other than Ming Chen, he's the only other person we've now had on the show twice. And we suck at getting people on the show.
But the people we do get, they're awesome.
We quality above quantity. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, quality above quantity.
Speaking about getting people on the show, you know what? Mark has a story. He won't tell it. But when you go to ask for, when you get shot down, it's good to get shot down by a hot chick. Who did you get shot down by?
Oh, Iconapalooza. I went and talked to, asked Shannon Elizabeth.
What?
Whether she would do a podcast interview. Because on Friday, I have proof of fact that I know she did some interviews and pictures of people on podcasts. But I guess by Sunday, she didn't want to do anymore. I don't even think it was Sunday. It was Saturday afternoon.
It might have been.
Yeah, because Matt took off after the live show. And we were.
That usually always takes off
on
us.
And she's like, no, I'm not doing any. But I reached out and I shook her hand. And I was like, okay, I'm never washing his hand again. You know, because you know, it's a Shane Elizabeth people who gets naked in American
then,
Pie.
Then he disappeared in the bathroom for like 20 minutes.
Hey, you know, you might only get to shake Shane Elizabeth's hand once.
I'm sure at least 15 minutes of it was taking a poop.
You got to take care of business right away after you shake her hand. You know what I'm saying? But, so I got shot down by Shane Elizabeth. But, you know, there's worse women to be shot down
right?
by.
You went in there strong.
That's right.
Went in there strong.
And I came out.
No, he did not go in there strong. He's like,
you were standing 40 feet away. Man,
sometimes it's like trying to get a bunny to come to you. If you go too fast, you scare the bunny. You got to ease. Mark was just
I like to think that I went in.
Matt, I'm afraid of what you do to bunnies.
I like to think that I went in. I shook her hand. I walked away smiling, and she probably thought, I wonder what he's going to do with that hand.
Oh, yeah. See, it feels like a warm
fat guy smile. Fat guy smile like that. So the third interview we have from Compalooza 2017, so fortunately not Shane Elizabeth. Yeah. I don't even know what I would have asked her. I would have just winged it.
Yeah, he didn't even have a clue. He's like, I don't know what to ask her. I'm like, go talk to her anyway. All
right. So how was it getting naked?
Yeah.
It's like, boobs.
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 Boobs. But, you know.
Boobs. That's the only question I have. Boobs.
Were you uncomfortable with the camera naked?
With your boobs?
Was it hard keeping your nipples?
Didn't she masturbate in that scene in American Pie?
I want to say she did. The webcam scene.
I'm just going to close my eyes right now.
Did you use a double? No.
So, no Shane Elizabeth.
In 13 Ghosts, there was a ghost that was naked. Do you wish that you were that ghost that was naked instead of her?
She seems like she'd been cool, though, if you asked her some funny stuff. I don't know. You know, I got shot down more like a hoe in church or something. I don't know.
A hoe in church.
Anyway, so Ming Chen has returned to the Rebel Radio podcast.
Yes, the prodigal
son. This is like his fourth time now on the show. He's like, oh, but that's all good.
You know? He's like almost part of the podcast.
Ming is so cool. A few things to talk about before we play the I don't even want to call it an interview either. It's definitely just a conversation.
Yeah.
Because Ming goes, oh, yeah, let's podcast. You know, he calls it podcasting or calls it potting. And it's more like having a conversation with him. And so grateful for Ming and how supportive he is of Compalooza, podcasting in general. A great guy to have on our team. He thought it's really cool that we have a place to podcast at the show and do live shows. We made his we took a photo with him, which is on our social media, and we even made his social media when we his photo collage. And he's opening a store in Houston, Coral Sword, and people don't know where Coral Sword comes from. It's a Final Fantasy reference. And he's opening. It's going to be him and Hunter Pence. He used to play for the Astros. Mm-hmm. Now plays for the Giants and still lives in Houston. Hunter Pence's wife and a fourth person. They're not famous. I don't know who they are. And they're opening this. It's going to be a coffee, gaming, and comic book shop over near downtown Houston, real close to University of Houston. And it's going to be like gourmet coffee because Ming likes coffee. It's going to have gaming in it. It's also going to have a – he said it's not going to be like a huge comic book shop. It's going to have like a comic section with like new books.
But what kind of gaming?
When you say gaming,
that's a broad term.
I'm hearing it's going to have a video game and table gaming room.
Okay, that's what it was like. There's a video game.
And he's going to have a podcast studio in it.
Wow.
For local podcasters to come use. So I think it'll be cool that we can hopefully record there one day.
Yeah.
The grand opening is in September, October is their date. It's something we will, as a podcast, we will definitely be going to that weekend.
Yeah.
Once we find out when it is,
we'll be going
late September and not late October. I'll solve the same issue Mark had at Comic Palooza.
Whether a baby pops out.
I don't know if the baby will come.
I thought y'all were
doing
November.
November 1st, but she's always 1 to 2 weeks early.
Right. So, but yeah, we'll definitely be so excited that Ming is opening up the store in Houston. He will be here for the grand opening. He said that. He'll be here for the opening of it.
Wow.
I would hope so if he's going to invest in it.
So that's really cool that we're going to have that here in Houston. I wish it was a little closer to us, you know, and not that downtown's super far, but, you know, something that I'm excited about.
More the parking when you go downtown.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's closer to one of the redeveloped wards over at U of H is what I'm reading. They haven't given the exact location yet, but, you know, they torn down a lot of stuff over there near U of H and rebuilt a lot of stuff, and it's over there somewhere. They kept a few of the vintage buildings, and they bought one of the old vintage buildings. They're putting in one of those is what I was reading. So apparently it's like 5 minutes from University of Houston. So
will we still have to pay $20 or $30 bucks to downtown. Park?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
But But Ming, man, this conversation with him, just a lot of fun. We talk about a lot of stuff. We talk about Houston and his love for it. Talk about eating in Houston.
Yes. He loved talking about eating in Houston.
Yeah. A few other things. We talk about Comic Book Men, which is, of course, coming back for season 7. I mean, how cool is that? That we live in a time where a comic book show could get 7 seasons of a reality TV show.
Yeah. I didn't see it lasting this long.
No, not possible 10 years ago. You know, and credit to Kevin Smith and his people for putting something together that's well done. And even airing late at night, it's still getting good ratings, you mm-hmm. know. And so
here's a fun show to watch.
Yeah, no, it is a lot of fun.
It is.
And you get some comic book knowledge, some pop culture knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys are hilarious. And they're just, you know, probably what they do every day, getting recorded doing it.
Yeah. So not much more to say. Enjoy this interview conversation with Ming Chen of AMC's Comic Book Men and Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, as he talks a little bit about that, too, about the behind the scenes of the show and the fact that these guys really do work there. They're not just on TV. They're not the Pawn Stars guys who don't really work there. You know, the Pawn Stars guys only record for TV, and you go to Las Vegas, you're not going to see those guys. You go to Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, you're going to meet me and Mike and Walt. Brian's only there during filming season. They even talked about that on a panel last year, that Brian's really not there that much. He's only there maybe a couple months out of the year. But Walt, Mike, and Ming really do work at Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash. So here it is, our 2017 conversation with Ming Chen.
Why they did that, that's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're at Compalooza again, Ming.
Yeah, I know.
It's awesome, right?
I hate breaking with tradition, so I'm back for my 4th year in a row.
There we go.
Two, I like streaks. I like streaking. So don't break the streak. Breaking streaks is bad. So again, I'm 4 years in a row. This is it is an honor. It is an honor to be here. I love Houston. I love Comic Palooza. I love that they like me enough to bring me back for 4 years. So I just love being here, man.
Yeah.
I really do.
It's fun. And man, I have to ask you, I saw on your Facebook, you went to the Underbelly.
I did.
How fucking awesome is that
place? It's a great place.
I took my wife there for our wedding anniversary last year, and we did the mystery menu where we just told them to bring us different meals. Incredible.
Yeah, in Japan they call that omakase, where they let the chef bring out whatever is good and whatever he thinks is great. And Underbelly is an amazing restaurant. You go to Houston, definitely make that one of your first stops. Yeah, I always go there.
Okay, see, my wife discovered it last year, and we went, and just absolutely amazing dining experience is what you would call
absolutely.
It. And so I know when you come to Houston, you like to hit the eateries and the beer bars and stuff, and that's part of the experience. So
yeah, I travel, I go to a lot of cons. I want to experience the cities that I'm at. I want to support the people who have mixed great cocktails, make great coffee, and make great food. So I really it's part of the experience for me. Some people just kind of go to the con, go back to their hotel, and wash, rinse, repeat. Then they go home. I'm like, well, how was the city? He's like, I don't know. I never got out of there. You know, we got this new invention here called Uber. Right. You can go anywhere you want.
Yeah.
And it's like $5.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. So, I really love exploring. It's part of the con experience for me.
And we love the fact that you are such a great ambassador for this con and for us here. And for podcasters especially. And so Combo Man just got picked up for season 7.
I know, it's crazy, right?
It's amazing.
It's crazy.
And I wish it wasn't on so late. I have the DVR and watch it.
No, I understand.
But you know, it is what it is. And, I realized I was listening back to our interviews we've done in the past, and I never asked you, like, what's it like behind the scenes? Like, I know, like, the pawn shop guys, I know they kick everybody out of the store and they film early in the morning.
Yeah, no.
Y'all don't seem like y'all do that.
That's crap, and they don't even really work there. Right. So, to me, it would be unrealistic. It wouldn't be reality if you went in the store and the guys that you just spend all that time watching don't even work there. That's crap. That's crap.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually there. So if you go, today's Friday, if you go there now, Walt and Mike are there.
Right.
I'm at the con, but I'm usually on Monday through Friday, I'm there or I will be there. You will see me. We can take photos. We can talk. I can sign autographs for you, whatever you want. And, behind the scenes, we really run the store. We're really there. The store has been in operation for 20 years this year.
It's amazing.
We just got this thing from our comic book distributor congratulating us on 20 years in business. It's cool. While we're shooting, if you happen to be in the store while we're shooting, we'll ask you if you want to stay for an hour, be in the background. And about 80% of the people say yes. The other 20 is like, oh, I got to go. My parking meter is running, whatever. And they leave. Between shots, we let people in and shop. Yeah, it's a working, operating comic book store. I would like to think that we're as real as possible.
Yeah.
No, every now and then I notice like the Ralph Macchio episode. It it looked like there was no one's source. So do sometimes celebrities ask just to come?
Oh, sure, yeah. Sometimes sometimes we'll clear the store.
Yeah.
Sometimes we won't. So yeah, it depends on the person. It depends on the situation. It depends on what we're talking about.
So what was any of the celebrities that came on this year? What was like the favorite? What was
cool? I think Ralph had to be one of the favorite. Yeah. I'm such a huge Karate Kid fan. I grew up in the 80s. 84 was that magical year where like almost every movie that came out became a classic. Gremlins, Karate Kid, Goonies, Ghostbusters, Temple of Doom. I mean, the list goes on. That's just a short, very short list.
It's funny. We did an episode on all the 87 movies, and we were talking about 84, too. It's like 84 and 87 were both like these incredible years.
Yeah. I think my favorite movie, 87, is probably The Lost Boys.
Mm.
But I'm sure there's one that probably is even better that I can't even think of.
Yeah.
But Karate Kid, I saw in the theater. I was never bullied heavily, but I was the underdog growing up. I'm still the underdog now, as a matter of fact. And you always want to see the underdog. Yeah, you know, how's he gonna get out of this? These guys are better trained. They're rich. Huh. They're aggressive. They outnumber him. How is he gonna win? It's like, oh, just trust the old Asian guy.
Right.
He'll always lead you to the path of freedom and righteousness and redemption. And that was great. But yeah, Ralph Macchio came in. I like that he wanted the playset, but he's very specific. I need the one with the referee, not the other one. I need the referee in the competition playset. And then he taught me how to wax on, wax off, probably. That's crazy, dude.
That's awesome.
That's crazy. Like, I sat in the theater, like, come on, Daniel-san. Like, freaking put Johnny in the body bag. And then, you know, he wins. And I watched that movie repeatedly after it came out. And to have him come, it's crazy.
Yeah,
he's an 80s icon.
Absolutely. About a couple days after that episode aired, I let my 8-year-old watch it for the first time.
Yeah.
He did the typical 8-year-old grumble. I don't watch an old movie, Dad. Nope. Then he doesn't move for 2 hours.
Yeah,
he absolutely loved it.
It's riveting, and it's kind of perfect storm of great acting. It's a great script, and it's just watchable. Like you don't need you only need half a brain to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, you just enjoy
it. Like, you know, guy moves to a new town, gets his ass kicked, meets an old Asian guy who teaches him how to live, some life lessons, and how to kick ass back. And all centered around the All Valley Under 18 tournament. It's so great.
Yeah.
It's great.
So is this season done?
The season is done.
I wasn't sure because the way AMC advertised it, I wasn't sure if there was more after Into the Badlands was over or what.
Yeah, so there were. We had 16 episodes. They aired 13,
okay.
And then they pushed it back for 3 weeks to give Into the Badlands a little push after The Walking Dead, and then they aired three other ones
the last
after that.
Three.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we will have more in October when Walking Dead comes back,
right.
My friends.
Yeah, because since the fact that y'all are a unscripted show, y'all don't have to worry about this writer's strike thing.
No, that's good. Yeah,
because there's been rumors of The Walking Dead getting pushed to like January.
Right. Although I heard they signed off.
Did they settle
good,
finally?
So yeah, so we're good.
And,
yeah, because writer strikes are no good for TV, man. Look at the third season of Heroes. Look at all the stuff that came during that short-lived writer's strike.
Yeah.
And whenever that was, like 2001 or whatever, yeah.
What was it, the first season of Walking, Breaking Bad?
Yeah, Breaking Bad was affected one year.
I fell in love with that show, then it just like ended.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, what happened?
Yeah, five great seasons, so yeah.
Well, you know, we're on TrustMeOnJedi.com, and we're not all Star Wars, but you know, Star Wars is a big part of it.
Sure.
And we're doing our live show tomorrow where we're going to talk 40 years of Star Wars.
Oh man!
So, what are your thoughts on? I know you love Star Wars too. Y'all talk
I
about.
Do.
What do you think about 40 years, man? I mean,
I think it's crazy. I thought when Jedi came out, like that was it. Mm-hmm. And I loved Jedi as a I was 10 years old when it came out, and I loved it. I even loved the Ewoks. I've kind of changed my tune a little bit on
that.
Is
that your favorite one?
My favorite one's Empire for sure, but I loved the Ewoks when I was a little kid. And then when the movie ended, I was like, oh, all right, that's it. And I don't know if you guys remember this. From then, from about 84 until, and you know, maybe I'm a little biased, from 84 until Clerks came out 10 years later, no one really talked about Star Wars.
No, not a lot.
They thought, well, this is it. This is over. When I was a kid, though, I heard rumors that there's supposed to be 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, man, when are the front 3 coming out? When are the back 3 coming out? And then, you know, the front 3 came out, and they weren't very well received. So I'm like, oh, well, they're never going to do the next 3. And then they did the next 3, or they're doing the next 3. But, I'm kind of like, well, what happens after episode 9?
Right, where
but then,
we, yeah.
You know, my friend's like, idiot, they're going to do Han Solo, or they're going to do Boba Fett, hopefully a Lando movie. Like, yeah they're going to do... in any direction.
It seems like Disney has a plan for the next 20 years, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But for that little period, I kept the flame alive in my personal life.
Right.
But I think a lot of people didn't until Clerks came on. Kevin brought up the stormtroopers on the, you know, installing toilet mains and stuff.
Right.
And everyone was like, I remember Star Wars. This guy's talking about Star Wars? I remember that. It kind of got him excited again.
Yeah. So, what's going on in the stash? Like, since you aren't filming yet, have you had any crazy items come there? Anyone's wanted to sell?
We have a lot of cool collections we'll get every so often.
Right.
So, a lot of amazing Spider-Man, like key issues, X-Men, things like that. We'll get pretty cool key issues every so often. We like it when Tomb of Dracula's come in, like number one, number 10, first blade, stuff like that. So,
I always like the oddball stuff that people show up to study. Yeah. I was like, well, that's really cool. And it's like you'll spring memories of, like, I remember that as a kid.
Yeah, first Moon Knight. You know, every time we'll get Daredevil number one, and it's fun. It's fun. And even current issues, there are some first appearances from Walking Dead, single issues that are worth a little bit right now and just kind of climbing. So
I remember the one guy that brought in the giant G.I. Joe ship.
Oh, yeah.
Did you buy it?
I bought it, man.
So, and your wife didn't kill you? Remember you were talking on the show, wife's going to kill me.
Yeah, well, I was going to set it up at home, and I was like, wait, I have nowhere to put this, so it's sitting in the basement of the store right now.
Okay.
So. But I still own it. What? Yeah.
In a box?
In a box, not the original box, unfortunately.
I've always wanted that.
God, it was like a dream of mine to own that, and I finally did.
Growing up, I had a friend in elementary school.
Yeah.
His dad was an exterminator, so he could afford. Yeah. I mean, like,
exterminators make, like, baller money.
He did. Literally, he had this one room. You couldn't, you know, none of the other kids were allowed in.
Right.
But he would, like, you peek in there, and it literally had a collection of G.I. Joe and Transformers, open and unopened.
Oh, my God. Wow. All right. He's a serious collector.
Yes. And he had the ship, and it literally had the dragonflies.
Yeah, and the Sky Striker was on there. And,
And I'm like, why can't we go there and play? Because my dad won't let me.
Yeah.
He's getting out, like, two toys at a time.
Which is asinine, because it's a toy, dude. Like, I know it's a collectible now, but back then it's a toy. It should be played. I had a similar story. My friend, his parents divorced, so he got whatever he wanted, and he got that for Christmas, and I hated him for getting it, but I loved him because he let me play with it, so that was as close as I got to it.
Lucky as I got was just the big bases.
Yeah, I got the bases, there's that oil rig, there's a G.I. Joe base, I didn't get the Terror Drome, that was too expensive. But
I had that one.
Yeah, but I got some of the smaller
ones I was able to get.
I got little things. So, yeah, now they're old enough, we can buy the bigger things, but they cost so much more now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I saw
like
a dude.
Four times more than what they did back in the day.
Yeah, and a con, like, I'll run into, occasionally I'll run into a booth with an aircraft carrier, like, inbox, open, but inbox. I'm like, hey, man, how much? $2,500. I'm like, nope, see you later.
Yeah.
No way. Too much. Too rich for my blood.
Right. Yeah, childhood costs too much nowadays.
I know. It's crazy, right?
And Matt, you're awfully quiet over there.
Yeah, I've been, you know, G.I. Joe's, I played with mainly Ghostbusters whenever I was a kid.
Oh, yeah, the Ghostbusters everything. And the real Ghostbusters,
yes.
Yeah, we always tease him because we're both 40.
Yeah.
So he's our young member of our podcast group. So sometimes we'll get the age gap stuff come up on the show, so we give him a hard time.
Yeah, that happens to us, too. I'm an 80s kid. The other three guys are late 70s kids, so they want their Migos and things like that. They're Evel Knievel stunt cycles. I want G.I. Joe Transformers.
You look at them and you're like, 12-inch G.I. Joe.
I know, right?
They're like 6 inches, right?
Yeah, I was like, these are dolls, man. These are what girls play with, man. I want my 3 3/4, man.
How are these
going
to fit into vehicles that aren't huge?
So great, dude. But
can you imagine how big their aircraft carrier would have had to be?
Oh, yeah, I know, right? It would have been as big as the house, dude. Yeah.
And so I have actually, have you seen any movies lately?
Guardians 2
definitely
sticks out.
It was fun.
So great. Fun. It had heart. It was, it was just great. So. Yeah. It was James Gunn's a genius.
Yeah.
And the acting was great. Michael Rooker is now a folk hero. Sean Gunn got a bigger part, which I thought he was great as Kraglin in the first one. Now he's got a bigger part.
Yeah, well, now that Michael's done with Guardians, Kevin needs to bring him into James Gunn Bob reboot.
Bring
him back into the View Askewverse.
Cool, yeah. But that was a huge winner for me. Mm-hmm. So
who would you say stole the show?
Definitely Pam Klementieff, who is here at Comic Blues.
Yes.
She plays Mantis. I think she definitely stole the show.
Yeah, I think there's two. I think Batista's character.
Yeah. And I think he already won out in the first one. He was already beloved.
Like you said,
but they both were good.
Being an 80s kid, you even said, like, how cool is it, like, seeing Kurt Russell and Stallone back?
Oh, man.
You know, it was, like, kind of cool seeing him on screen.
Oh, yeah, for sure. These, you know, these old dudes.
And Miley Cyrus. Who,
Yeah,
she did a voice for something. Supposed to be the original Guardians.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was cool seeing our, you know, these two action heroes, just back right. On the screen again.
And I hope they get Stallone some screen time in the next one, a little bit more.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I guess.
Hey, man, he's in the universe now. Yeah,
I guess they're talking 2019 because I guess Zoe Saldana is busy next year filming Avatar sequels. We don't really need.
To me, Kurt Russell always be Jack from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
Jack and I always liked that movie Breakdown, where his wife gets kidnapped. I always thought that was great. Kurt
like,
Russell.
I have not heard about that movie
that was
in so
like
long.
They
Kurt
thought
Russell.
He won a lot of money, but he didn't. And yeah. So he had to put it in a bunch of ones in a paper bag.
See, my favorite is just Overboard.
Goldie Hawn.
Good old Kurt Russell.
That's awesome, dude.
And, it's always fun talking to me. We could just talk all day.
We could. We really could, yeah.
But, are you doing a panel this weekend?
I am moderating the Clementief panel.
Okay.
Which, a little ham-handed segue, but... they're like, hey, would you moderate Palm's panel?
Okay.
Like Mantis? Like, hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, because I was looking through the app and I was like, man, maybe he's not doing a panel this year.
I've done one for like 3 years. So they're like, all right, let's see these big shots get a panel slot. So
no problem.
I get it.
And all I have to say is as you go into season 7, man, don't let Brian and Walden give you hell, okay? Come on, man.
We wouldn't have much of a show in that case.
I know, it's a lot.
Yeah, right? I know.
It's a lot. But, that's why I like watching it because, man, you guys are all good friends. That's how we are. We jack with each other. We're all just best friends.
Yep.
That's the way it's got to be.
Yep.
You know?
That's how you make people feel wanted here
like
in
this,
the South.
The older guys pick on the younger guy.
Yeah.
Yep. Always. And I'm the younger guy, so yep. Always.
That's it.
That's how bullying works, I think, right?
Yeah.
No, that's how love works.
That's why we watch the Karate Kids and we can learn to fight against the bullies.
Three words, my friend. Sweep the leg.
That's right.
Sweep the leg.
Well, Ming, thank you as always for coming on the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Always.
We appreciate it. I think you're our multi-winning most times on the show guest.
Yeah, man. Steve Martin in Saturday Night Live, man.
That's
I'm like a member of like the Five Club. And all right, man. Let's do it again next year.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, man.
Awesome.
And we'll see you this weekend for sure. It's only Friday, guys, so we'll have a lot of fun coming
up
this
weekend. Come see. Count Blues is the best, man.
All right. Thanks, Ming.
No problem, dude. Yeah.
All right. That was Ming Chen. Thank you as always for... coming on our show, Ming, if you do happen to listen to this.
Yes.
And, and we appreciate it, as always, for joining again. So that's our Compalooza 2017 coverage. That's our follow-up show. We have some other stuff to talk about. So I know y'all listen to interviews, and there's no way we can possibly top Ming and Chuck and Flash Gordon. I mean, there's no way I would ever try to top Flash Gordon. He would kick our ass.
Exactly.
But we haven't done a show in a couple weeks, so we have a few things to talk about before we go today. Lots of news going on lately. Some new trailers, first off. Let's kick off those. New Spider-Man Homecoming trailer. A little bit different vibe than the other trailers.
Yes.
A little bit more of the funniness of the movie and stuff. But I was watching this trailer and I felt like, do we need another trailer? It was already sold in the movie.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt about it.
I don't mind, seeing a little bit more and seeing, some different scenes pop up. It seems to be the thing to do. You release, four or five trailers now before a movie
seems
pops
like
up. You have a teaser. And then you have the teaser trailer, and then you have the official trailer number one, official trailer number two, and then the final trailer just a few weeks before the movie comes out.
My thing about when it comes to trailers and stuff is you can over trailer a movie to where the fact that you've seen all the good stuff, mm-hmm. and by the time you go and actually watch it in the theater, you're like, I've done seen this movie twice.
We've seen that a lot, but it's some of these movies, Mark made a point, to an extent, what's going to happen in a Marvel movie. And,
right.
even when you see it, you know what's going to happen, especially with plot-heavy trailers, like Mark has pointed out, we see a lot more nowadays. But it's such an awesome movie, you're going to see it anyways.
I don't disagree with that we're not going to go see it. I'm just saying it's you can overdo a trailer.
Yeah, but it's...
The subtle ones. I want the ones that are just what the hell is this movie going to have in it? I almost rather go to the theater not knowing a lot about it, but something that's already hyped, that you already know is going to be a good movie,
Well, selling a movie is always a difficult task. War for the Planet of the Apes, the second trailer for that came out, and I think that's enough. We don't need more trailers. But, that's a whole different thing. You know what the movie's going to be about.
Yeah.
Even before, you don't even have to give away the plot to know where Dawn left off, that this one is... the war.
Yes.
So you have to find a different way to sell that. Because you don't need to sell the plot because we already know what the plot is. So you have to sell it through extraordinary CGI, Woody Harrelson's performance, Andy Serkis' performance as Caesar, and the ultimate bat show. And you have to sell it as showing the scope of the film, which is what they've done, I think, with the trailers for War for the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
And showing the scope of how we've gone from Rise to Dawn to this, that it's bigger and the stakes are higher. You know, and I think so. You sell that movie in a different way, where Spider-Man, it seems like they're trying to oversell the plot to make people go see it, because, you know, and it's weird because Marvel Studios usually doesn't do that.
Not that.
It's
not like
they're
this.
Really trying to oversell Spider-Man.
Are they feeling it's not as strong?
Right. And it's like, I don't know if this is Sony doing the marketing on this or is Marvel Studios.
Ooh.
Now, if Sony's doing the marketing, then maybe they're the ones overdoing the trailer, you know?
Yeah.
Because Amazing Spider-Man films weren't as successful as they wanted to be. So it makes you wonder how they're doing it. And the poster for the film is awful. That last poster, it's like, it's more like an Iron Man poster with Spider-Man in the background. And I thought, I texted you guys, I thought it was interesting how they show every character in his costume and out of his costume. It's like, why do we need to see their identities? Both, it's just a really awkwardly done, terrible Photoshop job of a poster.
Yeah, it's like either have them in costume or out of costume.
The first poster where he's laying down on the bench in New York City behind him is perfect.
Yeah.
It gave you a whole Spider-Man high school vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And they go from that to this god-awful newest poster they've done. It's just like, what was that?
Trying to
do too
much.
Doesn't matter. Are we going
to
buy the poster? Nah.
No, but...
if there's a cool one.
But it's but it is a selling point to people when they see that, though. You mean, it has nothing to do with buying it, though. People see that hanging in the lobby of the theater, and they think, well, that's an ugly poster. You know, it's just not a very well-done...
That might not even make it
maybe
to the theater.
Maybe over-cartoonized.
Right.
Like a la Batman Forever or something.
Right.
Just the poster, not the
I would have liked just like the scene, like if there's like a scene in the movie where like maybe the costume gets tore up from him fighting and then the villain there in the background. That would have been a cool poster.
Oh, marketing wise, there's a lot they could have done with it. But mm-hmm. It's Spider-Man Homecoming. We'll still be seeing it in July when it comes out. Another trailer that hit is for a Netflix series based on the old video game Castlevania. And it's going to be
I have not watched
it's going to be animated. And it looks really cool. It's going to be adult animated. And I can't remember the guy's name. Adi Shakir, I think that's how you say it. He's the guy who made the Power Rangers adult film.
Okay.
Short film, and did the Punisher short film too. He's producing it, and he's promising that this
Dirty
is going to break
Punisher
yeah,
film.
He's promising that this is going to break the curse of bad video game adaptions. So we'll see. It hits Netflix pretty soon. I think around the time Spider-Man Homecoming comes out, like July 7th, they might be the same date. I'm sure I'll watch it. You know, I wasn't a huge like Castlevania fan. I remember playing the game casually, but don't remember.
I liked it. It was
I don't remember following the whole series or anything
the,
like that.
The NES version is really hard.
You know,
it's like I don't have any cheat codes for that game, so it's like I don't think there are any cheat codes for that game too.
I don't know. I just remember it being hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
So those are the few trailers. The other big news since last time we did a show was Hellboy's coming back.
Yes,
it's funny, man, because there were rumors of Guillermo del Toro and them doing Hellboy 3, and
I thought he was gonna say Hobo.
Hobo 3.
They kept putting it off him. No. Man, something in my tooth was coming out there. That's why I was talking funny. no, it wasn't a pube. But they kept saying, no, we want to do Hellboy 3, but the studio's not interested. Now, all of a sudden, we're getting a Hellboy R-rated reboot. And Ron Perlman's kind of pissed. You know, he let out a little bit of tweet about, like, oh, Universal, you didn't want to do another one with us, but all of a sudden you're rebooting it. He's not too happy about it. Guillermo del Toro's been kind of quiet about it, but I think as a director, he understands, you know, that you pitch projects and always work. An actor, I can see why Perlman's going to be a little more pissed.
Especially since that is him.
Yeah, and it's going to be the guy, I don't remember the actor's name, but the guy who is going to play, who's the chief on Stranger Things, is going to play... Hellboy.
Well, he just doesn't have the size for it.
I think he has the size. I don't know if he has the look.
That's what I mean, the size or the look for it.
And, you know, I haven't seen the guy in enough, except for Stranger Things, to know if he can pull it off. It's going to be directed by Neil Marshall.
Is it going to be a CGI character? When I think Hellboy, I think of this, like, big, bulky character.
Mm-hmm.
He's small in comparison to what's his name? I don't see it. Is it going to be a big giant costume?
It's one of those things. It's one of those things. I'm excited for it, but I'm also reserved about it.
Yeah,
because you know we really got used to to Ron Perlman as Hellboy, and I thought he had two really
Selma
good films.
Blair.
I thought the two animated films they did were pretty good. You know, speaking of, remember those used to be harder to find. Are starting to pop up now. In fact, Half Price Books on Copperfield has two copies on Blu-ray of the Hellboy animated films.
Really?
Remember you said you were trying to find them.
Yeah.
And they do have them over
there.
I
have to head over there now, man.
I mean, they were like $8 or something, not too expensive.
That's not bad.
It's like right down that street
and,
for me.
So, but it's weird. They don't put them, they put them in the anime section.
They put in the anime section?
Yeah. Huh. Well, they put all their animated, like, adult stuff over there, like the Batman animated stuff's all over there. So it's not even that section. It's weird. So, but so yeah, we're getting this Hellboy reboot. We'll see where it goes. I guess they're shooting for a late 2018 release next year. I guess it's going to start shooting in September. Ultimately, though, I'll take more Hellboy no matter how I can get it. I hope it's well done. You know, obviously, I thought they did a good job. Hellboy didn't need to be rated R, but again, you know, that seems to be the trend now. Oh, you know, let's make these darker characters rated R, you know, and see where we can go with them. So they're making this one rated R. And so we'll see. And the other news that's come out lately is Universal Pictures, which is fixing to release their Mummy film.
Mm-hmm.
So they've come out, and for years, we've always known them as the Universal Monsters, right? So they've given their universe a name. They're calling it Dark Universe. Okay.
All right. You
know, I don't know what else to say. It's like, I guess that's the thing now, thanks to Marvel, is to have a shared universe of films. And DC's obviously doing it too. And I why couldn't you just call it the Universal Monsters universe? I guess that's
Monsters
too much Universal
universe.
Monsters universe.
You know? The universe.
Of or the Monsterverse.
Monsterverse.
But see, I, see.
Well, they all do the Monster
no,
Mash.
No, see, Godzilla and King Kong fucked it up. Because Legendary Pictures is calling their thing Monsterverse.
Oh.
So they stole that shit from Universal, those assholes. You know? Because, like, Dark Universe, kind of weird. And I guess it's all going to tie in with Russell Crowe's Dr. Jekyll character. His corporation is involved with keeping the monsters at bay throughout time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're giving a modern take on it. And, you know, though, as a fan of those characters, though, I want them to do well. You know, I hope the first film does well. Tom Cruise, he's a box office draw internationally and locally. So I think hopefully the film does well enough, because they're not the second film in the series is going to be The Bride of Frankenstein, but not until February 2019.
Wow.
So they're going to go a year and a half in between films. So I guess they're going to give it time to see how The Mummy plays out and everything. And it's got some great cast, though. Javier Bardem is going to play Frankenstein. Johnny Depp's going to play the Invisible Man.
Oh, wow.
So some good casting behind this. Some good actors involved with this. So we'll see where it goes. I hope it does well. Because
yeah.
I think they're great characters have been around. I mean, they are Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman. Those guys or those characters are responsible for horror as we know it. You know, back in the late 30s and 40s when their films came out. That's what they've created. And we've got these horror movies. Is that Wyatt singing in the background?
Yeah.
So we have these horror movies that created the genres. Movies like Saw, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street don't exist without those original gothic horror films from the 30s and 40s. So there's a place in this world for movies like The Mummy and stuff to
there
do
is.
Well. And no, Brendan Fraser suck fest films, okay?
Hey, the first one was good.
No. First one was fun.
Yes.
Have you watched it recently?
Yes,
okay,
I have.
They suck.
I watched the first one and the second one, but not the third. The third I could do without. The second one...
Even the second one.
I didn't like the second one.
The whole CGI rock on the scorpion thing was weird, man.
That was weird. I liked the beginning. Like, whenever they enter his house and they're fighting. But it's like, I feel like they forced this background that he was a Magi and that she had some kind of tie to Hymenoptera and stuff like that.
Hopefully this whole reboot of it brings it back around and reboots it.
I think they had a great story. Hymenoptera, City of the Dead, the Magi, this secret group that
I think my
it.
Biggest thing for that is Brendan Fraser. I'm always going to see him as George of the Jungle. I think that's my
I
biggest thing
that.
With that film.
Yeah.
It's just like, he's not an action star.
Or,
you know?
Or Bedazzled. I remember him in Bedazzled. I really liked Bedazzled for what it was, because Elizabeth Hurley was in it.
It's like saying Bedazzled.
We'll see. Well, before we get out of here today, and the last thing to talk about is, unfortunately, sad news, Chris Cornell. Man,
yes.
You know, that crosses genres, you know, when it comes to someone who, we talked about icons earlier, like Bruce Lee, and I'm not even going to put Cornell in, like, in the same category as, like, a Bruce Lee, but he is a modern icon in the last 20, 30 years of music.
Yes.
Wyatt's adding his 2 cents back there, and, you know, Chris Cornell, man, growing up in the 90s, you know, Wyatt...
Get a little excited.
He's excited back there. Yeah, I grew up listening to the 90s grunge era. That's when I was in high school. You know, I was listening to all those bands, Nine Inch Nails and Jane's Addiction, Soundgarden, Nirvana. Obviously, I'm a big Pearl Jam fan. People listening to the show know that. Mm-hmm. And I never took off with Soundgarden completely, but he was always there. You know, I remember listening to the album that had Spoon Man on it, Super Unknown, and that was the first album that really got me into Soundgarden. Mm-hmm. I saw Cornell solo on his first solo album. I saw him with Audioslave a couple of times. Never got to see Soundgarden, unfortunately. And so his death was something that came as a shock to everyone, I think. Mm-hmm. We saw the outpouring of emotion and support that people have given. You know, when people commit suicide, sometimes there's a outpour of anger and people aren't as supportive. Like, well, screw him, you know. But this seems to be the opposite. It seems like people have been really, like, supportive. Like, they don't blame Chris for this.
No.
Like, they think that maybe he really has something wrong and the medicine may have caused it. And people just seem more shocked by it than anything because he's left his children behind and his wife. And it's sad, you know. And I that morning, whenever I found out, I'm driving to work and they're playing Hunger Strike from Temple of the Dog. I'm like, really? And very rarely I almost lose it over Slaughter. I almost started crying. I was like, wow, that's kind of sad, mm-hmm. you know, in the car that morning. And
yeah, I get the text from you guys. I didn't find out until.
But yeah, I think the news came down overnight for everybody because he was in Detroit and they found him, I guess, at midnight. So I think most people were waking up and finding out. So, you know, we didn't even know that. We knew when you knew that same moment. Well, yeah, we didn't really know. And, so, you know, it sucks. You know, it's disappointing that he couldn't get the help that he needed. You know, and it just goes to show you that even a celebrity has everything in front of him in the world, you know, sometimes needs that help. You know, we saw it a couple years ago, Robin Williams. You know,
yeah.
And it's a sad thing that, you know, you're making people happy and through your music or whatever, you may not be happy. And but best wishes to Chris Cornell and his family. Anything y'all want to add to that? I mean, it's...
They buried him right next to Ramon.
Yeah, Johnny Ramone, yeah. Apparently, that's a celebrity cemetery there in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I guess he was... I don't know why he wasn't buried in Seattle. Maybe it was a family request.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
They were friends.
Yeah, maybe so. Who knows, you know. But yeah, so Chris Cornell, gone, but not forgotten. So, didn't mean to end the show on a sad note, but... Sometimes you have to talk about stuff that's uncomfortable.
Yeah, and, yeah, for sure.
But we hope you enjoyed our Compalooza 2017 coverage. And remember, go to TrustMeMajedi.com to listen to our show, follow the latest news, follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff.
If you missed our last episode of Comicpalooza, check it out. That way you can kind of see, you know, what kind of atmosphere we're recording from. If you're, you know, and check out our friends. Who has also recorded at Comicpalooza. We had a big crowd there. A lot of podcasts.
Yeah, a lot of podcasts. And, you know, you can find us also on Stitcher, iTunes. Leave us a review and subscribe on iTunes. We're also on Google Play now. So plenty of ways to listen to the show. And we got a lot of good shows coming up this summer for you as we keep it rolling here on Comicpalooza. What is this, episode 72, I think? I think so.
Wonder Woman comes out.
Wonder Woman comes out. We'll probably be talking about that next week. I'm hoping I make it to see it this weekend. I think I will.
I already bought my tickets.
Same here.
See any reason why I won't
make
it.
Hopefully I can get out of work on time. I always tell them, hey, I got to leave at this time so I can go home and take a shower and go see an early morning show.
Because all the ladies will be there, Frank. You got to be fresh for the ladies.
No.
No?
But, you know, I know, you know, for those of y'all that follow us, on Trust Me, I'm a Jedi and the Rebel Radio podcast. Don't forget to also follow us on our individual accounts, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know, Matt has some weird ones, so you might not recognize his from the show, like some Taco Bell Grande one.
It's actually you. You're talking about my Twitter picture?
Yeah, like, no, just like it's, your names for your accounts.
Yeah. I don't mind following me on Twitter, but Facebook is personal.
And you're not getting in there.
And Instagram, I run the Trust Me and Jedi Instagrams. So that's the only thing. Yeah. They don't need to follow my Instagram.
Well, mine's not personal, so anybody can follow mine. And Frank T. Biscuit.
Frank T. Biscuit, tell them that you like his socks.
Well, yeah, my Twitter they can follow. I don't mind them following. My Twitter's at...
Well, all of mine is social media, so I don't
care. My Twitter's at I Got Her Speed, so...
Yeah, if you find me on my regular Facebook personal account, yeah, I don't friend anybody unless you're family.
Right, but that's pretty much a given. People already know that. So I don't know, why are you telling them they can just follow us then?
you know.
That's what Trust Me in a Jedi's Facebook's for.
That's yeah. right. It's all there.
Damn, Frank just giving out our Jeez. Personal information. You just want our social security like, numbers, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a list of our fears.
Definitely yours, Matt.
Yeah.
So, thanks for listening. As always, this is the Rebel Radio Podcast at TrustMeIm'aJedi.com.
We'll get it right eventually.
And hopefully we have some cool stuff coming this summer. We're working on some t-shirt ideas. We're hoping to have some t-shirts for people.
Yeah, hopefully we have some news for you on that.
Yeah. So this has been...
Matt the Electric Monkey.
Frank T. Biscuit.
This is your host with the most, Mark. Yes, the host with the most. And
with the hostess.
Thanks for listening as always. Just go there and do it.
Man.
Sam Jones, Flash Gordon. And this is Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is Chuck Huber. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.